The test is in four parts, part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. Now look at part 1.
Part 1.
You will hear a conversation between a commercial property letting agent and a businessman who wants to move his business to new premises. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 6. Answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 6.
Ah, good morning. Mr. Rich, isn't it?
That's right. Raymond Rich of ICT Industries.
ICT Industries. Just a moment while I put that on the form. Now, you're looking for new office space, is that right?
Yes. Our present lease is due to expire soon, and as the company's expanding anyway, we need to find somewhere to move to.
Do you prefer the suburbs, the city, or a commercial zone on the outskirts?
Well, currently we're in a very pleasant suburb, but as I said, we've outgrown that building, as we've got to move anyway. I think the city centre is where we want to be. Right in the heart of things.
I see. Anywhere in particular?
Yes. Somewhere in the vicinity of the main transport centre, because I have a large staff, and car parking in the city is terribly expensive. I think it would be a good idea if we didn't use our cars at all.
Exactly what size premises are you looking for?
Good question. Something more than the 10,000 square metres we have at present should do it.
Shall we say 12,000 square metres?
That's probably about right. Yes, I think that would meet our needs.
Just how many employees do you have to accommodate?
40 in all, but only 14 will have their own offices. The rest will be in open-plan shared offices.
Oh, I forgot to ask. Do any of your employees have extra requirements? Will we need to consider people with disabilities?
Yes. Actually, there is one in a wheelchair who'll need suitable access and another who can walk just a few paces. She uses a mobility scooter, so we'd need to make sure all facilities, especially toilet facilities, were suitable and accessible. And we'd also need to be either on the ground floor or to find a secure place by the lifts, or Mrs. Jackson to park her scooter.
I'll need to keep that in mind when I come up with the property for you to look at. Now, when are you thinking of moving?
Well, our current lease expires in August, so we'd like to have the move completed by then, of course.
Well, there is a very suitable property that I have in mind, here in the city, but the owners want a lease signed by the end of this month, May.
Ooh, too early, I'm afraid. I'd be ready to sign up by the end of June, though.
Shall we say signed up by the 1st of July and moved by the end of that month?
Definitely. Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 7 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 7 to 10.
Well, I'll keep your requirements in mind and let you know when something comes up. Wait a minute. There is a vacant office space on the 10th floor of this very building. Would you care to take a look? It has only just become available, but I haven't started marketing it yet because it's in need of a bit of a makeover. The floor area is about the right size.
Good. Let's see it then.
Well, what do you think? Elevator access is great, And the lobby area is roomy enough for that disability vehicle you were telling me about?
Oh, I don't know. There are too many small offices. Would we be able to take out a few of these walls and make bigger work areas?
I don't see why not. Most of them are just partitions. Obviously, load-bearing walls can't be touched, but there aren't many of those to worry about.
What about kitchen and dining facilities? We like our staff to feel comfortable eating at work. If they go out for lunch, it often leads to extended lunch hours and lost time.
Come this way. This is the kitchen.
Ooh, it's a bit pokey. We'd need to enlarge it somehow. What's behind the wall here?
There's just a storeroom. You could take out that wall and expand into that space.
Then what would we do for a storeroom?
Ah, well, see that tiny office near the entrance? It has no external windows or natural light. It would make an ideal storeroom.
Yes, you're right. The whole place is a bit dilapidated. Obviously in need of that redecoration you were talking about. And I don't just mean a coat of new paint. I think all the light fittings would have to be modernized. Those broken blinds have to be replaced, and this old blue carpet definitely has to go.
I agree. That's something we can negotiate with the owner. But overall, do you think it would fit your requirements?
Well, you haven't given me any indication of what the lease would cost. But before we get into that, what are the terms of the lease concerning length of tenancy?
Well, generally, in the city, leases are never less than 3 years.
Oh? I mean, we don't mind signing up for that period of time initially, but we don't necessarily want to have to move after that. We've been in our last place for 10 years, you know.
Well, the usual agreement is a 3x3x2. That's a contract for 3 years with entitlement to extension for 3 years, and then another 2 years after that. But let me speak to the owner first.
And one more thing. We have to consider the time frame. Remember, my current lease is due to expire in August.
Well, with reliable contractors, it shouldn't take more than a couple of months to do the necessary refit.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part two.
Part two.
You will hear an introductory speech to students at a summer school. You have 30 seconds to look at questions 11 to 14.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Climb Summer School. Now, I know most of you have travelled a long way to get here, and you're probably looking forward to settling into your rooms. So I promise I won't keep you long, but we've got to get through this very brief induction just to make your stay here as pleasurable as possible. Now, as you can see, while we're located very close to the centre of London, we're actually quite cut off from the main road. And we've got plenty of space for our facilities and students. This was part of our founder's vision, Jasmine Climb, who thought that the best environment for teenage students would be a place that combines the comforts of a big cosmopolitan city with the beauty and serenity of a quiet, remote site. Now, back in 1983, when our school was founded, This all here was an abandoned warehouse, and the classes were held in the main building that you can see over there. There were no trees, no conifers surrounding the property. There wasn't even a main gate. It took years and a great deal of effort to get our school to where it is today. And I'm sure that if you take a look at page 34 in your brochures, where you can find a picture of what the school used to look like back then, you'll agree that the changes we've made are more than impressive. But it's not just the facilities that make Clyme Summer School special, obviously, and I'm certain you already know this. Over the following 10 weeks, you'll receive an assortment of classes on a variety of topics, ranging from language, literature and poetry to creative writing, communication and project management. All of these modules have been designed to improve your chances of getting a place in the universities of your choice, while also giving you the opportunity to learn, excel and, of course, also socialise with people from all over the world. I can tell you, just among the 30 of you, we've got about 21 different nationalities. So what happens now? First of all, I'll be handing out a map of the premises for you to have a look at and explaining where everything is. Once we're done here, you'll all be taken to your rooms where you can unpack and relax for a couple of hours. And later on, we'll be having our first activity of the day, a mix and match lunch in the main hall, where you'll have the chance to meet your new classmates. Later on in the afternoon, we'll be handing out your first project assignments and splitting you into teams. And tonight, we'll be having our very first film night, starting with an early 20th century special.
You now have 30 seconds to look at questions 15 to 20.
So, let's get on with the map. You've already got a version of it in your brochures, so if you can open them to the last page so we can have a look. Very well. As I showed you before, the actual school is right over there in the middle. That's where you'll be having most of your classes. Adjacent to it, you'll find the main hall, which is where we'll be hosting most events, such as today's lunch. On the left from the main building, you'll find a smaller building, which is where the accommodation and welfare offices are located. This is labelled as the garden office at the front, and it's easy to spot because it has a green door. Each of you is assigned to a different residence hall. We've got 3 residence halls in total, one on the left and 2 on the right. The one right next to the garden office is Ursula Hall, named after our founder's sister, while the other 2 are Peter Hall and William Hall. Now, as you can see, there are 3 more buildings to the left of the semicircle here, and 1 more building on the right-hand side, next to William Hall. So that one, which is shaped a bit like a dome, is the pavilion. This is where all your letters will be delivered, and in the basement floor you'll also find a laundrette. Please make sure you've got plenty of £1 coins, as you'll need one for the washing machine and another for the dryer. And that row of buildings on the left, the one closest to us here at the gate, is the canteen, where you'll be able to buy snacks as well as breakfast, lunch and dinner on days when we don't have an event with food provided. The next one is the gym, which is open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. from Monday to Friday and until 10 p.m. at the weekend. And the last building, right over there, is the study centre, where you'll find plenty of computers and books, as well as a great selection of DVDs and magazines that you can borrow with only a small refundable deposit of £5. Now, please remember to keep your student card with you at all times, as you'll need it to access most of these facilities.
That is the end of part 2.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part three.
Part three.
You will hear two students discussing a science project. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 25. Listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 25. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Bob. Thought about the science project yet?
Which one? The presentations are scheduled for next month.
The experiments that you and I are working on to demonstrate density, buoyancy and the compression of gases.
That'll be complicated.
Well, it's not supposed to be. It'll be part of the Making Science Simple series that's being showcased next year, and we have to be ready to demonstrate by the end of next week.
Oh, well, simple, you say?
Yes, not just the concept, but the materials too. We have to use cheap, readily available, common items. Expensive lab equipment is out of the question.
I remember something about using recycled or throwaway items if possible. Anything portable that we can bring into the lab.
That's right.
Well, any ideas for the project?
What about the classic Cartesian diver?
Is that the same as a Cartesian devil? The invention named after the famous French physicist René Descartes?
Yes. A long time ago, superstitious people labelled it that because they couldn't comprehend the scientific principles it demonstrated. They thought it was black magic.
How shall we do it?
By keeping it as simple, transparent and economical as possible.
So, to start with...
Open your pencil case and let's have a look. You haven't got any...
Any what?
Paper clips.
Oh. There are lots of them in the bottom of my bag. They slip off my papers and collect in the bottom. Look, here's half a dozen.
But they're all big metal ones. I want little ones. Small, vinyl-covered, multicoloured ones.
Oh, I've got one or two of them too.
Great, and if we look around, especially on the floor, we're bound to find a few more. See? Here.
What else do we need?
A small rubber band.
Well, I've got one of those in my pocket.
No, not that kind. Let's go and ask Tara.
Why?
Those really small coloured bands for making ponytails are ideal.
Hey, Tara?
Yes? Have you got any spare rubber bands, like the ones you fasten your hair with? Oh, heaps. A whole packet full. Help yourselves.
Terrific. So far, it hasn't cost us anything. What now?
Let's go and rummage through the recycling bins beside Joe's mini market.
What for?
We want a 2-litre plastic soft drink bottle with lid.
Hey, I draw the line at sorting through other people's rubbish, and we're also not likely to find one with a lid.
Well, go into the store and buy 2 litres of soft drink.
What flavour?
It doesn't matter what kind of drink you get. Just make sure it comes in a clear PET bottle.
Where are you going?
To the cafeteria behind the resource centre.
What for?
I'm after some straws.
I can get them from the shop when I buy the drink.
No, I've seen theirs. They're the waxed paper ones. We need clear plastic, and I know they've got them in the cafeteria. I'll also see if I can get a tall plastic cup from there.
Good luck. Meet you back here in 5 minutes.
Maybe longer, because I want to go over to my locker and get a wire coat hanger.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 26 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 26 to 30. Right. Have we got everything now?
I think so. I've got extras of most things, so don't worry if this doesn't work first time.
Okay. Assembly. Step 1.
Take a straw and fold it in two. No, not like that. These plastic ones are quite hard to fold. Try pinching it in the middle. That should make it easier to bend. You may even have to bite it, but not too hard. You want a sharp crease, but you don't want to break it.
How's this?
Good. Now, second step. Wrap a rubber band several times around the ends to hold them together.
Then?
Add weight to the diver.
So, this straw is the diver?
Yes. See how I'm pulling the outside end of a paperclip out a bit? Now, hook the part I bent out into the rubber band that's holding the straw together. No, not that way. It'll fall off. That's right. Turn it over. Now, hook two or three more paperclips on. It's hard to say how many we'll need. The idea is to get the diver to be almost all the way submerged, but not quite. We can put it in this tall cup of water to test it.
What do you think? Too buoyant? Add another paperclip?
I think so. Okay, on to the next step. Have you got the empty bottle?
Not quite.
What do you mean?
Well, it's not quite empty.
Pour some into this cup for later. Good. Now, fill the bottle with water all the way to the top and we'll gently lower the diver in. Great. Now put the cap back on.
And then?
The final step is the demonstration of our experiment. You will see that when I squeeze the bottle, the diver sinks. And when I let it go, the diver rises.
When you squeeze, the air bubble trapped in the straw compresses and the water rushes in, making it heavier, so it sinks. And the reverse happens when you release the bottle. What's the coat hanger for?
Oh, that. If our experiment didn't work the first time and our diver stayed on the bottom, we'd have had to fish it out with a piece of wire or a hook of some kind. It's best to be prepared.
That is the end of part 3.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part 4.
Part 4.
You are going to hear a lecturer giving a talk on a psychological condition called synesthesia. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now listen and answer questions 31 to 40. Today we're going to look at a fascinating condition that challenges the idea that we all see and experience the world around us in a similar way. For example, What do you see when I mention a day of the week or a month? What colour is the letter A or the number 10? If you often find yourself having more than the normal sense sensations, you too could have a condition known as synesthesia. Synesthesia is a harmless but fascinating condition which is often described by psychologists as the joining of the senses. We normally experience our senses individually, so we see a colour or hear a word, whereas people with synesthesia will find two or more senses being stimulated at the same time by a single stimulus. Some people will see or feel a colour when they hear a sound. Others will experience a taste or smell when another sense is stimulated. This happens automatically. The sensation can't be managed. People often go through life unaware that they have the condition. A common response from individuals who learn for the first time that they have synesthesia is one of surprise to discover that other people don't experience the same thing. It's a normal part of life for them, and they will rarely describe the symptoms negatively. To estimate the numbers of people with synesthesia, one group of researchers sat people in front of a computer and showed them letters and numbers in black. Participants were asked to choose a colour for each character they saw. A small proportion of participants, namely those with synesthesia, consistently described the same characters as having the same colours. On the basis of the results, researchers were able to predict that synesthesia affects about 1% of the population. This number has been confirmed in other research. Synesthesia takes many different forms, but the most common is to see or feel a colour in relation to letters and numbers. It's commonplace for people to identify A with red, B with blue, and so on. Some people will actually see a colour, but in most cases, it's a question of feeling or sensing the colour. However, it's just as commonplace to see days, months, letters and numbers spatially, that is, in lines or circles, for example. People might say they see Monday up high, Tuesday just below Monday, Wednesday on the left, Thursday on the right, and so on. This doesn't mean that people with synesthesia always agree on what they sense. Two synesthetes will often argue over the colour of a letter, for example. But patterns emerge if a large enough sample of people are observed, providing clear evidence of this condition despite individual variations. Colour and spatial synesthesia are amongst the most common forms of the condition, but they are by no means the only way people experience it. One of the more interesting combinations is word-taste synesthesia. This occurs when words lead the person to experience tastes or certain taste sensations. So a person's name might have the flavour of a particular sweet. Places might be associated with the taste of particular snacks. Taste needs to be seen in a wider context here. The sensation may be a feeling on the tip of the tongue or at the back of the throat, and will differ from person to person. Some researchers believe we are all born with the condition, and that it's most prevalent in our early years, but it then tends to become less noticeable as we enter childhood. It's a fascinating thought that as infants, we experience the world around us through our senses in a different way than as adults. However, testing this hypothesis will be challenging, bearing in mind the difficulty of getting feedback from young infants. Research also points to the fact that synesthesia runs in families. In fact, as many as 40% of synesthetes, as they are called, know of someone in the family with a similar condition. This won't necessarily be a close family member, and the condition may be traceable back to previous generations or to an extended family member such as a cousin or uncle. There is evidence that synesthetes are often creative and will often have artistic hobbies or interests. Researchers think this is not necessarily because synesthesia makes them naturally more talented in this area, but the fact that they have multiple sensory experiences generates an interest in, for example, art or music. So, that's synesthesia. Apart from its intrinsic interest, for psychologists, it's a fascinating indication that we may all experience the world around us in different ways. Once upon a time, these findings would have been regarded as highly subjective, lacking evidence, and not of any scientific worth. However, we now have a much greater interest in how the brain helps us make sense of the world, and the study of synesthesia is one way for us to discover more about this.
That is the end of part 4.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.